Absolute Radio Country is filled with the best sounds from Nashville 24 hours a day. But even we can't fit in everything. You'll find a full story right here. This is Country Music Talk, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of the world of country music.
We love bringing you the biggest names from the world of country music here on the podcast, so thank you for listening. Remember to subscribe if you haven't already, and that way you'll never miss an episode. And if you're in the UK, you can listen to Absolute Radio Country live and enjoy the No Repeat Guarantee. It's our promise to never play the same song twice during your workday between 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. Right, on with the podcast.
This is the Country Music Talk Podcast from Absolute Radio Country.
Riley Green, welcome, not just to Absolute Radio Country, but welcome to the UK.
Appreciate it, man. My first trip.
Yeah, this is exciting. So you must have been to Canada and Mexico.
I've been to Canada. We've done some big festivals up there.
Right, but never across the pond to this side.
No, this is the longest trip I've been on by far.
How was the flight?
It wasn't bad. They had it where I could stretch out, you know, yes, and lay down. I think that was necessary.
So.
I was surprised at how well I slept, actually.
Oh, okay, yeah, good.
The lady asked me if I wanted her to wake me up for breakfast. And she didn't, and I woke up when we landed.
You're living the dream.
Yeah.
That's perfect. Although I have to say, like, I don't know about you, but I mean, you will obviously be traveling a lot more than I do, but I never want to miss things. So I'm like, even though I know I need to sleep, I want all the food that's coming my way. I want to watch the films that I'm not going to watch when I'm not in the air. Like, you're not that guy. You're just like, I'm out.
The film thing doesn't bother me because I do fly quite a bit.
Right.
But I had to get out of the meal thing when I went on my first major tour. I opened for Brad Paisley, and he's like pretty well known for having really good catering.
Yeah.
And I was so used to being broke that like free meals, I had to eat everything I could. So I would just like make myself like have to take a nap. I'd eat so much every day, every meal. And now I've realized like, okay, you can dial it back a little bit. So the meals don't really bother me anymore.
Okay, fair enough. And you're not bothered about the films because you got plenty of time to watch those.
I got plenty of time to watch.
Stuff.
Yeah, I watch the same movies on repeat. Like when I get home, I watch the same things. So.
All right, what have you watched? What's the film you've watched the most, do you reckon?
Probably Tombstone,
okay,
or Shawshank Redemption. Those two are kind of right there together.
Come on, that's
There's a movie called Tin Cup with Kevin Costner, a golf movie.
Yeah.
One of my favorite movies ever.
Golf movies, kind of an underrepresented genre, but when they're out there, they're huge. Like
Caddyshack. Happy Gilmore.
But they always do super.
Bag of Vance.
Yes, but you could probably get to 20 and that will be your golf movies, but they always do super well.
That was all I could think of.
But
yeah, I mean, that's what's not overdone.
No, not overdone.
Baseball movies kind of like that.
True. American football movies, more of those.
Yeah, but there's some classics in there.
There is some. Friday Night Lights. I was all about
Varsity
that.
Blues.
Yes. What was the one with Sandra Bullock?
Oh,
where she adopted?
Blindside.
That one. Anyway, we're not here to talk about movies.
I thought we were.
Just getting to know each other. That's all about. So it's great to have you over here,
yeah,
finally.
Because
I mean, you must have heard that country music in the UK, it's like boom.
Really taking off. Yeah, it's what a great time to be able to come over here and especially play a show like opening for Morgan. It's awesome to see country music kind of taking over in places I didn't really know it was popular.
Yeah, because also I think sometimes people who are outside of country think, well, you know, they didn't grow up the way that we grew up, or they don't have the same life experiences, so they're not going to connect with it. But ultimately, and in your music kind of proves this, is that you can be talking about quite specific things, but you're also talking about things that everybody goes through, you know, emotions and life things. And it doesn't matter if you're living here or you're living there.
I didn't really know what I was doing when I started writing songs, but I just wrote about what I knew and what I saw kind of growing up, and really fortunately that people kind of grew up the same way I did all over. And that was probably the most eye-opening thing. I'd never been on a plane until I signed a record deal in 2018.
Really?
So really traveling the world now and seeing that people, you know, they can relate, make these specific street names or whatever it is I'm saying in these songs kind of about their own life.
So you didn't ride a plane until you signed your record deal. How old were you then?
2018, I was probably 27.
Okay. I mean, I can kind of relate to that because, not to drag you through my personal hell, but I'm originally from Tennessee. I've just lived here for a really long time, so I've got this really weird accent. But the first time that I ever flew on a plane was the day that I left Tennessee to move to New York City, and I was 19 years old. And I felt like, you know, I don't know about you, but when you have that kind of life experience that everybody else kind of takes for granted, I remember being on the plane and I wasn't afraid of flying. I was just fascinated with every single aspect of it.
It was weird to see the people that could put the window shade down and go to sleep because I was so excited.
Yeah.
And now I'm that guy.
You're that guy now.
Yeah.
What a a privilege, though. What a lovely thing. Do you ever have time to kind of reflect on that? Like, yeah, I've come a long way. I'm doing okay.
2020 was that year for me to really take it all in, you know, because from the moment I signed a record deal, I was already touring, playing 100, 120 shows a year.
Right.
It's really kind of been a blur. So, you know, 2020 hit, and we obviously slowed down to a halt.
Yes.
And, you know, I mean, I won a ACM award.
Well, I started to say you got a big old award that year, right?
Yeah, I had a number one record. I've been on major tours. We were selling out small arenas at the time. I mean, so a lot of things that I never thought I'd be doing. And, you know, playing the Ryman, playing Red Rocks, selling out Red Rocks, doing Hyde Park. Like, these are all things that I'll look back on at some point and really appreciate.
Yeah.
This first trip over here is kind of one of those things, too. It's crazy to even be here.
Are you going
to
have some time to kind of poke around and see a little bit of the UK
and
London?
I always say the second trip somewhere is when I really get to kind of take it all in. We're pretty quick. We're flying out the next morning and have a show in Calgary Saturday. So we're wide open right now.
So you'll be sleeping, going back across the ocean.
That's right, yeah.
You know, you were talking about the tour that you did with Brad Paisley, which was your first big kind of support thing. And you were talking about how up until that point you'd been pretty broke. Did you have a moment, or have you had a moment where you kind of have stopped feeling like that broke guy? And the reason I ask this, because I mean, I grew up really poor, and I had this conversation with Dolly, who, you know, if anybody should feel rich, it should be Dolly Parton, right? But it was interesting to hear her talk about how she still doesn't feel like this isn't going to end. And I'm just wondering where you are in that.
The value of money doesn't really change from when you were growing up, I think.
Yeah.
I was doing construction work. I was still building houses until I signed a record deal. That was the day I quit framing houses. I think something that really keeps me, maybe the word's grounded, is going home. Because my farm in Alabama, my grandmother still cuts grass every day. My dad works for me on my farm. My mom's still, like, they live in my house, you know, up on the hill that I built. Like, nothing changes there. I'm still the same guy. And, you know, my dad still polishes his $5,000 truck every morning like it's the nicest thing in the world.
Yeah.
So I was able to take care of my folks and in ways like that. But I think the only thing that's really changed is I don't have to worry about some financial things that I used to.
Sure.
But as far as the value of money, I mean, you know, it's, I still have the same mindset I did framing houses, kind of, you know, so it's, plus you don't have time to spend any money on the road.
True. Yes. Yes.
You eat catering at the venue, and we ride on the bus everywhere. So,
your feet are still on the ground. They're just wearing better boots.
That's right.
You talked about your farm there in Alabama, Jacksonville, Alabama. Is that where you're from? And it's a fairly small, I mean, it's not like 200 people. It's just over 10,000 or so, something like
it's
that.
Probably between 10 and 15.
Okay, yeah. So it's not tiny, but it's also by no means.
Yeah, you can't. You gotta act right. Yeah. I always say small towns, you're held accountable for how you act, because if you cut somebody off at a red light, you're probably going to see their grandmother at Walmart later that day.
And also, they now really know it's you.
Oh, yeah.
They'll be like, oh, that Riley's changed.
Yeah, he's changed.
But yeah, that's a good way to keep your feet on the ground. And also, I suppose, a good way to still inspire you, the songs and the art that you make, because, and this is totally valid as well, you know, sometimes people become really successful and their songs become really successful. And then obviously, as they're going through this, their life changes as well. And they start having other experiences that you can then write about. But I suppose also with you kind of touching base with your farm and with where you're from and your family every now and again, it means that you kind of have two different things to pull from, you know? I mean, it's all your life, but two very different experiences.
That's probably the most valuable thing I have, is the ability to go back. And Nashville is an awesome place. There's a ton of opportunities that I've gotten from spending time in Nashville, but I don't have a lot in common with the Nashville lifestyle of a big city, you know. And I mean, going to the bar every night, whatever. I mean, like, it's bachelorette parties every weekend up there.
It is.
Where I draw my inspiration from is being back home, and I think that's something that helped me early in my career, was that's all I knew to write about.
Right.
And it's hard to have blinders in a town like Nashville. You start worrying about, well, so-and-so's doing this, and they're writing this kind of song, and it's working on the chart, so.
And this maybe should be the vibe
and
I'm going
I think
in,
that's a lot of what happens, and then things get to be too similar and monotonous, and I try to go home and write about how I grew up and the values there, and it's always worked for me.
So the latest album, Ain't My Last Rodeo, congratulations on this. So many collabs on this as well with some I'm assuming your buddies now, like Jelly Roll and Luke Combs.
Yeah, I've been fortunate to get to know some of these guys, and you know, how can you not like Jelly Roll? He's a fan favorite. His story's so interesting.
He gives the best hugs as well.
He does. He's such a humble and appreciative guy, and I think that really people can relate to that.
I think so. And also gives hope as well, you know?
That's right,
you can go through lots of different things in your life and come out the other side.
He's been through a lot, so.
Yeah, he has.
But yeah, man, it's cool to be able to text these guys and send them songs and say, man, you want to be a part of this? And really fortunately for me, Luke Combs wanted to be a part of Different Around Here, and that became a big hit for me, so.
Yeah, congratulations on that.
It's been awesome to have some of these collaborations and hopefully many more.
I love this song with Ella Langley for a variety of reasons, but one of the things that I love new songs that sound old, because it clearly shows that the person doing it, in this case, you know, you and Ella, like you've got this respect for the music that came before you, but also you're making it modern and you're making it something that people today can relate to. And also a kind of a different sound for you as well, maybe, than some of the stuff that people know you for.
Yeah, it's, you know, I grew up, my granddad Buford was a huge fan of Roy Acuff and George Jones and Merle Haggard,
yes,
and really old country music. So a lot of that traditional sound has definitely influenced me. And Ella's from a couple hours from me in Alabama.
Okay.
Grew up very similar, I'm sure. And I've been a fan of her for a long time. So it was awesome to have her out on tour. And I think a promoter that we both use played me that song, and just because he knew it would be something I would like. And I wrote a verse for it, and it's, I don't think any of us knew how big of a song that could be, but I think that nod to the traditional sound is something that people can appreciate for sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So you say, Ain't My Last Rodeo. Do you remember your first rodeo? You know, do you remember your first, well, either actual rodeo, but you know, your first big show or your first big moment?
Yeah, I think it was, and you know, looking back, it wasn't as big a moment as I thought, but I opened for a Marshall Tucker Band at a place called Zen Park in Anniston, Alabama, and played a couple of songs that I'd written, and crowd went crazy. Like, just at the songs I'd written, you know, I'd played covers before. I never thought I was the greatest vocalist in the world, so I wasn't going to blow anybody away like that. And that was when I had a moment of like, well, the things that I can write can set me apart from everybody else that are doing cover shows and that are maybe more talented than I am. And so it really gave me a little bit of a business mindset on, you need to write songs that these people can relate to. And that's how I learned to write songs. I'd play every week, and if this line did well or that line or this type of song, I'd change it. And that was the moment where I thought I might have a career at some capacity in country music.
Sports, big through line in your life. And also a lot of country artists kind of, you know, had... We're initially thinking this is going to be my career, sports. We were just talking to Tucker Wetmore last week about this, and I was saying, you know, you guys could form some sort of super team or something with all of the sportsmen and ex-sports men and women in country. Was country always running along, like music, was it always running alongside that?
Yeah, you know, I never thought I would have a music career. It was something that I had a hobby of, playing guitar with my granddad Buford. We'd sit around and play an old Epiphone guitar that he had. Played three sports in school. That was definitely my focus.
And you mentioned that guitar in this album, don't you?
They don't make them like that no more.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Still have it, yeah. You know, and I think I played sports year-round so I wouldn't have to go to work with my dad, you know, because it was you're going to work if you're not playing ball or in school.
Football was the main one, but you were doing all sorts of other
stuff. Yeah, I played baseball
well.
And basketball as well. Loved football. Ended up going and playing at Jacksonville State University, which is in my hometown. And the music thing kind of went as my football career ended. I was not the best at going to class.
Right.
And so I realized that college might not have really been my thing. I started playing in bars and staying out all night, and that was kind of the end of my football career. And I definitely think that there's some similarities, and especially as an 18-year-old kid, you know, having to get up, having to go work out at 5:30 in the morning, having to, you know, be a part of a team and things expected of you, that was a lot that I didn't have.
Right.
So I learned a lot from playing ball, and I think it probably carried over into my music career.
So it wasn't an injury or something like that that you stopped? You just...
No, it was just I didn't like going to class.
Okay,
my mom would give me a hard time because I could go duck hunting at 5 o'clock in the morning, but I couldn't make it to a 9:45 class for some reason.
When you're duck hunting, do you need a call or can you make a call without it?
You got to have a call duck hunting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, there are some people. I mean, there are some people that can do it.
To super talented.
Yeah.
They skip college.
Yeah. I was hoping you could do it.
I should have just brought one with me.
Yeah, I'm gonna
send one over so you always got it in the studio.
Please, so. Yeah, I can use it to punctuate each and every show. Because I do feel like they might be difficult to find here. We don't have like a Bass Pro Shop or anything like that.
Well, then, if you don't have a Bass Pro Shop, that was what I was looking for all day.
We've got
a Harrods. I walked the streets all day, couldn't find one.
Yeah, keep looking. You've mentioned your grandpa a lot, and he obviously is featured quite heavily in not only an influence in your life, but in your music as well. He converted a barn or something into a music venue?
It was my great-grandparents' house.
Okay.
The floor was falling in, and we used to go down there and sit. We have a sawmill back behind it, and we'd sit on the porch and play that guitar, and he started, like, calling up people that he thought played the banjo or the mandolin. He'd have the yellow pages out and, like, call it. And so these old guys started showing up, and we'd meet every Friday and play. And eventually people started coming to watch. So we went inside, tore the floor up, you know, sawed lumber, made a new floor and a little stage. And it went on for about 13 years. COVID actually kind of ended it, but it was called the Golden Saw Music Hall. We painted a big saw blade gold and put it on the front, and the old ladies would bring snacks, and they'd have a break at 8 o'clock, and anybody that wanted to come play. And I just sat up there and watched how they made chords, you know, and I learned how to play sitting around with a bunch of old guys.
It sounds like, I mean, even as an adult, it sounds pretty magic, but for a kid, it must have been just like a wonderland.
I had no idea how cool it was. I thought everybody did that, you know.
Well, the Carter family did, but other than that, I'm not
but
sure.
But I would bring
did.
People out there, and they'd be like, man, this is amazing, you know, like it's the craziest thing. And it is a really cool thing looking back. We actually have done a series on YouTube called The Golden Saw Sessions, where we bring some songwriters down and they tell stories about how they wrote these songs and all that. It's a neat thing. I'd like to keep it alive in some capacity.
Yeah. Do you think you ever bring it back physically?
It'd be tough to do. I'd have to not be going from London to Calgary and in the same week. You know, when I get a little more time, maybe things slow down a little. I'd like to bring it back.
Do a pop up at a festival though, or something like that. That'd be quite cool.
We might have outgrown it at this point. You know, it's just because it's not a big place. It holds about 150 people.
Oh, that's perfect. You want people not being able to get in.
Yeah, we just don't tell anybody about it. We might could be all right.
So when we were setting up this interview today, somebody said, I can't remember who, that they were like, oh, yeah, the only thing he's got to do is work out and then come see you before this thing. So working out, no matter where you are, I mean, obviously, this is something that's been a part of your life. Does that come from sports? Or were you, you know, in high school, were you like a scrawny kid before you got into sports?
Oh, I was. I was like 6'4", 170. Like, could not put weight, ate everything I could, drank protein shakes all day. My metabolism was real high, I guess.
And
It's always one of those things where, like, you know, you don't enjoy reading when you're in school because they're making you do it. Then you might, when you get out, it's kind of like that. I didn't really enjoy working out until I stopped playing ball, and then I got where I kind of enjoyed it. And now I'm just fighting aging. You know, I've gotten where we're busy on the road, so we've got a nice gym set up. We bring in a trailer, and I try to work out every day if I can.
Every day?
Try to. I said I was going to work out this morning, and I slept till the absolute last minute and didn't.
All right.
But I'm bad about going at like 10 at night.
Right.
Like, I'll be the most awake just from playing shows and kind of getting in that weird sleeping habit. I'll go work out late at night.
I have to say, I have the exact shirt that you're wearing, and I'm so glad I didn't wear it today. I mean, I thought I was like, oh, this shirt looks pretty good on me, but Lord,
that sweatshirt's nice, man.
So now, I know you only just gotten here, and I know, you know, it's all just kind of happening for you in the UK in terms of kind of feeling it out and seeing what it's about. But do you have a taste for it now? Like, now that you've seen how easy it is to sleep when you're coming across the ocean, you're going to come back?
I certainly am not afraid of the trip as maybe I was a little bit before, you know, because a 4-hour flight for me, you know, just long and lanky. It's just tough for me to get comfortable. That was a different kind of flight, you know?
Yes.
Being able to lay out, but I think seeing people really reacting to the songs and knowing songs that maybe I didn't really think they would, I think that'll definitely have me kind of hungry to come back.
Congratulations on everything. It's just really nice to meet you, and it's always nice to see when somebody who's been working hard at something for a while, A, remembers their roots, and B, it works out for them. So congratulations on that.
Well, I appreciate it. Y'all have obviously done a lot to help me, and I appreciate that too. It's going to be fun to come out here and watch this kind of grow.
Well, yeah, and you know, keep sending us great music, and we'll play it.
Send you a duck call and a decent song once a year.
Exactly. Nice to meet you, Riley.
You too, man.
The Country Music Talk Podcast from Absolute Radio Country.
An in-depth look behind the scenes at the world of country music.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. We'll have another dropping soon for y'all, so don't forget to keep it country.
If you enjoy the Country Music Talk Podcast, chances are you'll also enjoy Absolute Radio Country. It's the place where real music matters. And we love country music just as much as you do. You'll find us online on the free Absolute Radio app, on digital radio throughout the UK, or just ask your smart speaker to play Absolute Radio Country.